morning, but there's a delicious stew potted and being prepared, so I'm looking forward to that.
Stew.
It smelled good. It looks weird, but hopes are high.
Hopes are high. Like, as high as the hopes for the Pete Buttigieg campaign?
Hopefully higher than that.
That's the way we get by, the way we get by. All that's the way we get by, the way we get by. We go out in stormy weather. We rarely practice discern. We make love to some weird sin. We seek out the tacit turn.
Welcome to Alone Together, Pandemic USA, an audio document about living with the COVID-19 pandemic here in the United States. This is episode 3, day 23. I'm Joe Scott.
I'm Jasmine O'Connell.
A little later in the show, we'll have a review for the film Upward, the newest movie from Pixar.
It's Onward.
Upward's actually the name of the straight-to-video knockoff of Onward. Uh-huh. You can look it up. It's really funny.
Okay.
I got them mixed up right now. But yeah, there is a movie called Upward where they basically took the characters and tried to appropriate as much of their likenesses as they could mm-hmm. without being sued. Okay. They even include the vampire girl from the Hotel Transylvania movies that Adam Sandler made. Mm-hmm. Like, she just appears like completely ripped from that and plopped into this mess as well. So. Okay. If you don't have Disney Plus and you somehow have access to a video store, maybe check out Upward and let us know what you think about that. But we will be reviewing Onward, the newest film from Pixar that had its theatrical release wholly derailed by this pandemic a few weeks ago and is now available for everyone to watch on Disney Plus. So we are more than 3 weeks into this thing. And it's starting to feel like the prediction that the stay-at-home order that's happening in most states would last until the end of April might have been a bit optimistic. We might be into this thing until the end of May. What do you think about that, Jasmine?
That sounds right to me. I'm hearing just, you know, from people who are involved with the local public school system that they're thinking school will probably not go back into session this school year. So I think people should plan to kind of be at their homes, you know, through May. We're also hearing from public health authorities that they think the peak in our area, where North Carolina is likely about 4 or 5 weeks out from today, the peak of, you know, disease prevalence. So I think that we will definitely be asked to continue to stay at home through that time.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of wondering what sort of impact that's going to have on everything. Because I felt like, you know, going to the end of April was definitely going to be a challenge for a lot of people. But going till the end of May is only going to make that worse. I definitely, for the markets here, I don't know. And I guess we'll have to ride that out. But I guess we did get some indicators. You know, there are people who run very important industries that rely very much on dates and times, specifically for the release of movies. I'm talking about the entertainment industry, and they've given some indicators as to how long people who've spent some time looking at this think it might last. And you get that just from the movie releases. All movies scheduled for release this year have been completely rescheduled, with the first movie slated for theatrical release dropping on June 19th, with, ironically enough, another Pixar Disney film called Soul. That's like the first scheduled movie for theatrical release. And a lot of films have been rescheduled from summer of this year to later in the year, and even well into 2021. A huge example of that being the newest Fast and Furious film that had been rescheduled from its May opening this year to April 2021. I'm kind of hoping that that might allow them to do some reshoots, where this wave of Corona COVID-19 bugs is chasing after Vin Diesel, and he gets in his car and he outruns it.
Maybe there could be a subplot where somebody is trying to steal like a shipment of N95 masks, and they have to take them out so that the N95 masks can get to their destination.
Yes.
Sort of a throwback to the original, you know, stealing the truck full of VCRs.
Yes. Yeah. And then they rescue that shipment of the masks and the ventilators.
Yeah.
And then the nation just declares Vin Diesel president. He's I'm the president now. I think that would be a great ending.
You know, I just think they can work with what's happening.
I really think they should lean into it. You know, they talked about, you know, one of the big rumors for a long time is how they're going to send this franchise into space. But I think with this one, they could go a little bit more political, perhaps.
For sure. You know?
So we'll see if it becomes a race for the masks. Another big disappointing bit of news that hit me was when I found out later this past week that Wes Anderson's newest film, The French Dispatch, has been rescheduled from the summer all the way to October. You know, that, and you know, if I was going to risk being in an area with a bunch of people for anything, it would probably be for a Wes Anderson film. I'm a big Wes Anderson fan, but here's an essential question for you, Jasmine, as someone who enjoys going to the movies. Do you think that cinema culture will ever be the same after COVID-19?
Well, I do want to note that maybe they moved the release date of that movie just for your birthday, that it's being released in October specifically to celebrate your birthday.
That's it's a few days after my birthday.
Yeah, so that's a possibility. You know, I think it's interesting the way people see movies in the theater has been shifting for a few years. You know, the trend towards assigned seats and larger seats so that you have a lot more distance between yourself and your fellow theater goers. It's less of a tightly packed communal experience in a lot of theaters now. And I, as you well know, do not like going to the theaters where I can't have my assigned recliner. I don't want to go to the theater where you just have to sort of see where you're going to be able to sit once you get in the theater.
Yeah.
That's not my preferred experience.
You like to be in control.
You know, I really like the assigned seating. I like the big comfy seats. So that does provide a little more distance between people, which I think will make people feel more comfortable. And, you know, it gives, I think, theaters the opportunity to do some things like instantly, you know, blank out half a seat so that people have a substantial amount of distance between them if they're not, you know, in parties together. So I think there are some options for theaters to maintain some kind of social distance once they decide to reopen where they are doing that kind of assigned seating.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot more challenging for theaters that haven't moved to that kind of a model as they think about how to manage crowds in the new reality.
Yeah, you know, maybe they would just give patrons, I mean, they wouldn't even have to give you permission, but you could just, when you're buying your tickets, purchase a buffer seat on both sides so that people aren't sitting right beside you if you really want to do that. And honestly, now that I'm thinking about that, that might be exactly what I do. The first 3 weeks before the stay-at-home order, while the virus was still spreading horribly, I basically lost the nerve to go to theaters. I didn't want to do it, you know, and now I'm still not sure. And this is crazy because I love movies. I've loved them my whole life. I'm not sure if I want to go back, especially if we don't have an immunization shot or something to just help make sure that we're all good. You know, there was some speculation. You know, we talk about major changes, and one of the big changes that happened was a lot of these films that came out in late February, early March, the releases got completely just destroyed by this virus. So they put them straight out on streaming services where you could watched them for $20, and there was speculation that the latest Marvel film, Black Widow, would simply move to an online release and be purely an online release. But that's not the case. The film's release was simply just bumped back to November 6th, which was the slot for another Marvel film, The Eternals, which has been bumped back to the slot of another Marvel film, kind of creating this like 3 to 4 year chain reaction where all of the Marvel films have been bumped back 6 months, leading to the one I was most looking forward to, Thor 4, being pushed all the way to 2022. You know, and it made me think, by the time that Marvel releases Black Widow, it will have been 18 months since the last really real Marvel Studios film, Avengers Endgame, was released. I don't count Spider-Man as like a really real Marvel Studios film. You know, it's kind of in between.
Right.
But could this lengthy gap in releases sort of derail fan momentum for Marvel films that's sort of been its stock and trade, is one leads right to the next, and you just maintain that enthusiasm? But with this big gap, could that perhaps sort of curtail a lot of that enthusiasm, not only for Marvel films, but comic book films in general?
I think it's a real problem. And I think it's a real problem that they're leading in back into that momentum with a Black Widow movie. And I think it's a problem that they're leading in with the Black Widow movie that it looks like they're making. And, you know, all that we have to go on really is the trailers that are out. But
what does it look like they're making?
Well, it looks... So I'm going to be really upfront about my biases when it comes to Marvel movies. And I like the Marvel movies where I feel like there is some humor and some fantasy or science fiction elements to it. So I like Doctor Strange. I love Thor Ragnarok. I like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. I don't like... Like Civil War, I didn't like that much. Winter Soldier, I really didn't like that much. So the movies where it's like superheroes having arguments and punching each other are not my favorites. And I know that some of those are like the most beloved movies in the canon for a lot of fans. And to me, it's like, it looks like Black Widow goes home and has arguments with her family and then has arguments with the government in Eastern Europe. And
the perfect movie to put out before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like my kind of, the kind of movie that I enjoy the most from Marvel. Plus, we know that the characters already died. And spoilers for Endgame, I guess.
Yeah.
And so it feels like the wrong time to put out a Black Widow movie. It feels like they should have done that years ago, honestly.
Honestly.
And then the content of the movie, for me personally, is not my favorite kind of like Marvel movie content. I think getting people re-engaged with a character that is already passed on, I think it's going to be a tough sell.
It's low stakes.
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, there's some great talent in that movie, it looks like, but it just doesn't look fun. And I think people are going to want something fun. I think that's the crux of it for me, is that I didn't feel like Winter Soldier was fun. I didn't feel like... Civil War had its moments, but those movies where it's just superheroes punching each other and disagreeing with each other don't feel that fun to me in the way that like Thor Ragnarok was fun. It was a fun movie. So. Yeah.
Well, you know, and I think that Avengers Endgame was just so colossal.
Right.
So huge of a movie that I feel bad for any Marvel movie that has to follow that up, let alone the Marvel film that will be following that up 18 months after the fact. That's such a hard game to play.
I mean, to some extent, the Far From Home Spider-Man movie followed it up, and I thought it was great. Like, it didn't have to compete with what Endgame was, and it was still a really enjoyable movie. So.
But, you know, at the same time, that movie kind of played like an epilogue, like just sort of like, here's an extra chapter, here's the part in Lord of the Rings where they go back home and fight Saruman. Like, yeah. Just... a little minor end note adventure to the big epic, you know, and this is the beginning of a new chapter, and they're starting with a character who is gone, and maybe the movie has some brilliant solution for why all of this will be immensely compelling and wonderfully satisfying. You know, maybe Natasha has some sort of secret that is sort of the key to the next wave of Marvel stories. Who knows? I'm not necessarily counting all of it out, but mm-hmm. it is in a difficult place.
It is. I agree. And I also recognize that I, you know, probably have a minority opinion about which movies I think are the best in the MCU. So,
I mean, you know, some people view women as a minority, even though there are more women in the world. No, I think it's, you've made very valid points. And you don't have to necessarily discredit yourself there. I thought now would actually be a great time to get some insight from someone who lives in Los Angeles and actually works in the film industry. One of my very, very good friends, Jay Floyd, who he works legal clearances on films primarily. He's also a filmmaker on the side, but he's worked on hundreds of movies. His IMDb page is insane. And he actually grew up here in Greensboro, where this show is recorded. So let's go to that interview now and really quickly just see how things are going for him as well as for the entertainment industry in general.
Hi. I'm on the phone with my friend Jay Floyd, who both lives in L.A. and works in the film industry. How are you doing right now, Jay? How are you holding up?
Okay. You know, I mean, it's definitely strange. How are things there in Greensboro?
Well, here in your hometown, things are good. You know, I think one of the things that can be a little vexing is that some people don't think this is real, that this is serious. They're not staying at home. They're trying to find ways to go out to interact. Sometimes, you know, you're at a store just doing a necessary supply run and someone tries to stop you and have a conversation. And, you know, your life has become sort of a Larry David movie where you're sort of trying to remind people of the rules, like, this is how we behave, do not do anything else, and they think you're an asshole.
Let me ask you something. Do you get the sense that such behavior is more of a difficulty in stopping long-held social practices, or is it willful ignorance?
I think maybe it's column A, column B. What do you think?
Well, I think it depends on where you live. Honestly.
Are people taking this seriously in L.A.?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, when you go to the grocery store, even walking around, now people are even following the mask order. For the first couple of weeks, people were having a hard time accepting what was happening. But then by the end of the first couple of weeks, we started having, you know, tape lines in the grocery store checkout lines. You have to stand in line to get into the grocery store. They installed plexiglass between you and the checkers at the grocery store. I mean, the changes started becoming really noticeable. You know, I have friends whose businesses have completely shut down. I have a friend who runs a very popular gym called Bodybuilders Gym here in the Silver Lake area of Los Angeles. And they had to completely shut down, and she was scrambling to figure out how to pay her employees. And then on my own doorstep, two projects that I'm currently working on, I have three in the hopper. One is a new Jackass film. The other is a Quibi show. It's actually a series version of Varsity Blues, the film, which is funny because that's the second movie I ever cleared. I do legal clearance work for film production. And then Jack Ryan season three, it hadn't started shooting yet. And there is some pre-production movement still, but of course, none of these productions are going to be gathering to shoot anytime soon. We just don't know when, and it's a very strange place to be in.
So first off, I guess, why do you think the Jackass crew stopped? This seems like a perfect opportunity for them to behave like jackasses.
Well, it certainly does, except when you have Paramount Pictures Corporation behind you, and they are not going to be liable for dead jackassers. Actually, all the meetings that I was in leading up to the shutdown, we had shot a fair amount before we shut down. But all the meetings, you wouldn't believe the amount of prep work we do in relation to safety and liability. We had an enormous number of meetings about each and every bit. They seem very off the cuff, but there actually a lot of planning goes into them.
Oh, gotcha. So I guess for people who maybe don't understand, what exactly does it mean to work with clearances?
Oh, what I do is I basically I refer to myself as the lawsuit condom for a movie. I'm trying to prevent copyright and trademark lawsuits. So if if, for instance, let's say we need a Picasso hanging over the mantle of a character's house, in a character's den, I have to go license that Picasso before we use it, because if I don't, we've committed copyright infringement and we will get a legal claim. So I work with the crew in pre-production and production, trying to make sure nothing goes in front of the camera that will cause us legal problems.
And I guess a really good example for people who maybe want to know what you prevent, like if you've ever seen a documentary or a reality show where someone's shirt or something in the background is blurred out for some unexplained reason, that's clearances. It wasn't cleared, so they had to blur it.
Yeah, and the Jackass feature films that you've seen, I've worked on all of them, and so anytime you see a blur in there, that was me saying, no, that's a lawsuit, we can't do that. That practice was established in the Jackass television show. So seeing blurs in a Jackass product is not unusual to the audience. So we have that freedom there. We don't have that freedom in a narrative scripted film.
No, that would be really weird.
Can't have blurs running out. Now, I will tell you, we have removed things from feature films that slipped through, that shouldn't be there, that would have caused us lawsuits. We have removed them, either digitally removed them or darkened them so much you can't see them. I, of course, won't tell you what they are.
All right.
But that does happen. We just have to do it more artistically and scripted content.
So I guess let's talk about the industry. And I mean, no one can really predict what the long-term effects of this are going to be, but how do you feel like this virus is going to affect your industry? A lot of movies have been rescheduled to the end of the year, to even next year. Do you think this will affect the kinds of movies they're going to make? What's your take on all of this?
Well, the one thing I do believe is that it is going to affect change. What that change is going to be, I don't know. Some of it I think was inevitable. Some of it I think needed to happen. When I look to history, what I see is, for instance, you know, there was a motion picture industry during the polio epidemic, and it came back. Every time we have gathered in a theater, it's been post-polio, you and I. It doesn't wipe it out. There's a different predator on the loose now, though, which is, of course, at-home viewing. And seeing Universal lead the charge to jump in and shorten the exhibition window by force and offering up, The Invisible Man and some other projects for $19.99 rentals through streaming platforms. That was an interesting thing. They really did take advantage of that. I see both sides here. They do have an investment to protect and they do have a studio to run and they have to make money. So I understand that. I also understand the exhibitors being quoted in like the Hollywood Reporter, I'm forgetting who said it, but, you know, saying we will not forget that they did this, you know, because the exhibitors still have a lot of power.
Well,
go on.
I can't necessarily blame the studio for that move. They're trying to recoup their investment. They've got, it's not like they're going to be able to hold these films that have already come out and then try to re-release them again and launch a brand new ad campaign just to keep the exhibitors happy. I mean, the theaters were closed. They had to play it somewhere.
Yeah, and look, you know, studios never sleep. They are very expensive to run. Even on Varsity Blues and Jack Ryan and Jackass, I still get emails during the week from people who are still working, and a lot of them are from, like, Paramount.com addresses. You know, these are people who are now working from home. The infrastructure does seem to still be employed. It's the physical production personnel who have to gather in the same spot at the same time that had to be shut down. Varsity Blues is shooting in Atlanta, and it was slow to shut down, but it did. Jackass was actually already on a calendared break and just hasn't come back yet. Jack Ryan, I'm not sure what's happening there. And then I have another Quibi project coming up. American Gigolo is now going to be a series for Quibi. I know I haven't seen any scripts yet, so I can't react to it, but I'll be working on it. And I just heard about it, and then suddenly everything went quiet. I was reading an article in one of the trades about how challenging this could either be a boon or a bust for Quibi, which is launching tomorrow. That we're talking on April 5th. This will be on April 6th. Quibi is launching, and they're still going to keep that date together. It could either be there are so many people who need some sort of diversion that it's really good for them, or it could not be because everybody lost their job and they don't want to commit to another fee. So we're going to see. Joe, you and I have talked over the years. You have been, correct me if I'm wrong, you have sort of been of the idea that the theatrical motion picture is an endangered species anyway. Wasn't that you?
Yeah. I really would be surprised if movies exist theatrically in the way they have in 10 more years. I kind of feel like we're staring at the death of cinema as a theatrical experience.
Did you see the cover of the Hollywood Reporter, the last issue?
No. What did it say?
It's just the image said everything that their fears are. It's the coronavirus, except for it's the Death Star. Yeah. It was a really good image about how people are feeling right now. Very creepy. I don't know. I think that, you know what? Through every global tragedy, the desire for a public to gather together to enjoy something together has never gone away through all of the tragedies in human history. Why would it happen now?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I personally love going to the movies. I love experiencing movies with a crowd of people. But I know, 3 weeks before everything shut down and Invisible Man came out for its initial theatrical run, I was pumped to go see it because I'd heard some good reviews. But then I was like, oh, I just don't want to go to a theater. I just don't want to go. And, you know, I don't know if how long it's going to be until I'm ready to go to a theater to see a movie, even if they're all reopened.
The paradigm that has shifted that there is no precedent for is that the experience of home viewing has become so good. My home theater, you know, I have a 70-inch 4K plasma, 4K OLED that is beautiful, and I have a surround sound system. It's very theatrical to watch a movie in my space. I won't get to roll with the laughter of an audience. You know, that cannot be replaced. The types of movies, you know, I used to go to a movie every week at least.
Yeah.
Now I go to one every 2 to 3 months.
Well, you know, and I think that will be one genre that suffers is comedies. You know, Netflix, I think early on they saw comedy as a film genre that they could capitalize on because it doesn't cost that much to make a comedy. But a lot of the Netflix original comedies, I feel they just hit flat and not so funny. I feel like they're not audience testing these films, and not being able to watch these comedies with an audience makes them feel a little less funny to me.
I will tell you, I find myself launching the Netflix app rarely. It's not a place I go. I have other more targeted services that I go to more often.
Which one?
Well, Shudder. I'm a horror movie fan. So I go to Shudder fairly often. I go to series on Hulu more often than I go to Netflix for anything. I tune into HBO for things like The Daily Show or, you know, their weekly type series, and occasionally a series that they do that I happen to like. But no, I don't find myself going to Netflix that often. I don't hear that little chime very often in my home. They just and, you know, they're a client of mine, and I've worked on a lot of their material. It's just I don't fully understand what they're going for with the material that they create.
Yeah, I feel like they are skewing a lot of times for a much younger audience than you or I.
What'd you call me?
I called you.
I may be 53, but I am wildly immature. Do not forget that.
I gotcha. But, you know, I feel more emotionally mature than the person who might enjoy a lot of their series sometimes. Like,
what's going to be interesting? Yeah. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go on.
Oh, what was the I forgot the name of the show where two people are dating and they never see each other's faces.
I can't forget it because I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, I caught a little bit. I was like, wow, this is really painful.
I worked on a big zombie movie called Army of the Dead that is a Netflix show. And it's a big feature film, and, you know, it's going to have, I don't know. What I want to see is, how do we know if people ended up loving it? Is it just through dialogue on social media?
I think that's a great indicator. And I think they also, one of the things they clock is how many people watch something from beginning to end. You know, yeah. Where if you're watching something on Netflix you don't like, I just stop watching it.
But Netflix doesn't release that information.
They hold that close to the chest. They are now sort of releasing their top 10 lists, which is helpful. But I guess here's another question.
I also go to the Criterion channel a lot.
Yeah, that's a great service. And if anyone out there is looking for a way to watch great movies, I can't recommend a better one.
Yeah.
But you've worked in movies. You've worked in everything from small movies to gigantic blockbusters, Tom Cruise movies, to even Netflix movies. What is the business like if we see less theatrical content and more streaming content? What is that like for just people working in the industry? Does something change for you?
Just being a worker bee, I mean, because I'm a creative as well. I made one feature film, which you have seen. And that's the reason I've been making movies since I was 12. I started making movies in Greensboro when I was about 12 years old. I remember in high school, I made a punk rock version of Macbeth called Big Mac. Anyway, that just came to mind, and I just remembered shooting it in the parking lot at Grimsley and having my friends dress up as punk rockers and beat each other to death. Anyway, to Kim Wilde's Kids in America, because when you're making a high school movie, you don't have to license the music.
You don't, yeah.
We saw an uptick in the volume of work for us worker bees. For the creatives, that means that, you know, people who were successfully writing and producing content were also more busy, so there are more of them. But that is not really sustainable. So I don't know where it ends up. I don't know. You know, the advent of the blockbuster and what they became, I'm a person who detests the comic book movies. I just hate them.
On occasion, I'll hear
something is exceptionally good, and I'll watch it and be like, okay. I mean, I know Avatar wasn't a comic book movie, but that got me. I liked it. I enjoyed it. It was intellectually stimulating enough for me to like it. But spending $400 million on one of those things means 30 smaller films don't get made.
Yeah.
And I can't stand that, because when I grew up in the 70s, that kind of movie – things like Network and just the really interesting films that gained popular appreciation, it's harder to get those made now.
Yeah.
Those seem to be – and I was hoping that maybe that sort of work could just move to – that format could move to television, but what it did was it turned into series. You know, our really interesting work is done in the series space now.
Yeah.
Is your question, do I think that there's going to be more or less? I don't know.
I mean, you know, I guess, yeah, more productions, more work. I mean, are streaming budgets smaller than blockbuster budgets?
Well, the big features that I've done for Netflix, some of them have been gigantic budgets. I worked on something called Triple Frontier, and I don't think anyone saw it on Netflix. It was a gigantic action film.
It was really good.
I haven't seen it. I just worked on it. that is true with a lot of my work. I worked on Marriage Story, which was a typical mid-budget film. Was not a gigantic film, but they spent the money they needed to spend on it. I don't know. I don't know what's going to become of that model. I think that it parallels the question of what's becoming of our society as a social entity.
Yeah.
You know, what do we value getting together to do?
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, I do host a lot of events, and that's part of my job. And I really don't see a way to move forward with events until there's some sort of immunization shot or something, some sort of, you know, treatment for this virus. There's just no way you could really ensure a large event, a large gathering of thousands of people. That's just not going to happen.
Here's what I think is going to happen in Hollywood this year, as far as the business of producing content goes. Understand, this pandemic mimics the advent of something like a writer's strike pretty closely as far as the business model goes. And so what but what's different here is we're probably going to have another wave of this kind of shutdown around October.
Yeah.
So I bet you around end of July, early August, we'll probably be in a space where they pull the trigger on getting people back together to actually make content. And it goes hard and heavy for a couple of months preparing for another shutdown.
Yeah.
So that they can get everything into the post-production guideline where people can do their work and not have to be in the same room together.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm guessing. I have a feeling my center summer is going to be insanely busy. And then I think things are likely to shut down again in the fall.
That's my guess. I think that's right. You know, the writer's strike definitely put sort of a kink in the hose in terms of production. And, you know, you can sort of go back to movie history, recent movie history of right before the writer's strike, during the writer's strike, and after the writer's strike, and see the way that affected a lot of the movies during that time.
A friend of mine pointed out something last night that gave me the creeps because I had never thought of it, and it is really creepy. I think the state of American culture is at a low point at the moment, and I jokingly will say that started with Paris Hilton. I knew something was wrong in our culture when someone like Paris Hilton became famous for no reason, and I was really worried about that we would become this vapid society. We currently have the result of that proliferating. A friend of mine pointed out last night that he believes, where media is concerned, the 1989 writer's strike is what started it, because that's when the machine decided to make reality television.
Yeah.
Because they didn't need writers for it. And I'm wondering what would the next catastrophic innovation be that might be thought of right now. That concerns me a bit.
Yeah, maybe it's just a bunch of podcasts.
Well, that's not bad. Some of those are great.
Yeah, right?
Right, as we're here talking on one.
Yeah. Well, Jay, I want to thank you for talking with me a little bit and just sharing what's going on. What is one thing that you're doing really quickly just to keep yourself sane?
This. Engaging with human beings.
Yeah, I think that's
the most important thing to me right now is engaging with human beings. I'm spending more time talking on the phone with people than I have in years. And
yeah.
I'm also attending certain types of meetings in the Zoom format. You know, I'm getting involved that way. And going for walks, that's still legal.
Still legal.
Yes.
Just not with large groups of folks.
No, exactly. And I wave more at strangers, which is not a bad thing.
It's almost like you're bringing a piece of the South over there.
It's true. It's true. It's like, who is that friendly freak? That's me. I'm from Greensboro, North Carolina. We say hello.
We do. Well, thank you so much,
Thanks
Jay.
For having me, Joe.
Have a great day. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Now for our next segment, which is the status update. And that is where Jasmine and I talk about how we are doing. And normally we do that sort of on an individual basis. But you'd suggested that we talk about maybe how we are doing as a couple living in this pandemic. So, Jasmine, this might be a loaded question, but how are we doing as a couple?
So I think we are incredibly fortunate to be doing well as a couple. And what got us on this topic, I think, was sort of reflecting on how fortunate we are to be doing well as a couple, that this is a time where just thinking about how difficult it would be to not be doing well as a couple in this situation, that if you were, you know, struggling as a couple or having challenges, that sort of being stuck with that person would be so difficult. But you and I have been doing great. And, you know,
hey.
So, you know, our relationship was in a great place. And so it continues to be in a good place. And I think we could talk a little bit about, you know, what we're doing maybe to maintain that.
For sure. You know, just to sort of agree with something you said, you know, this pandemic is kind of an ultimate stress test for all kinds of relationships, you know, and if things aren't so great going in, like you're really just sort of starting to like take the brunt of it right now. And, you know, things that were frayed are only going to get more frayed. And, but yeah, what are some things that you feel like we've done right over this time?
So I think there are some things that we can take credit for. And then I think there are some maybe cheat codes that we don't get to take credit for. So, you know, my personality, my nature, I'm an introvert. I'm pretty happy just being at home. I don't have a strong sense of needing to be like out and about. And so that definitely makes it easier, right? And I think you maybe want to be out and about a little bit more than I do.
Just a little though.
Yeah. But I think if we were both people that had a strong sense of needing to be like out and seeing people and doing things all the time, that would make this a lot worse. So I think we have to acknowledge that we are starting in a place where this is automatically less onerous for us than it is for other people. I think we have so far both stayed employed, right? So that makes a huge difference. If you
knocking on wood.
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, if you are in a place where you're staring down unemployment right now, that adds a level of stress to any, even the most solid, the most strong relationships that just can't be ignored, right? You know, I think you can't underestimate the value of that kind of financial security. So I think those things are like, we can sit here and say, oh, we've done it perfectly and that's why we're happy. But like, there are some foundational things that are really making it a lot easier for us.
For now.
And we want to acknowledge that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I think some things that we, have done right is, I think one thing that as a woman that I try really hard to do is to vocalize my no. So when I don't want to do something or I don't want something, to just say like, no, I don't want to talk to you. I want to be by myself, or I want to like, I don't want to watch this movie, or I don't want to do this thing, or I don't want to take a walk right now, or whatever it is that I say that. And then equally important that you as a man hear it and respect it.
Yeah.
And I think that is kind of the core of everything that works, both normally, but also especially right now.
Yeah, also, you know, like I remember about 2 days before the stay-at-home order hit, or not even the stay-at-home order, but before like you started to work from home and I started to work half of the time from home, you sort of pre-gamed with some like ground rules. Like there's just certain things that I'm going to need right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you really thought that through. And, you know, I'm not necessarily going to share all of those because, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like that's like between yeah. us. But,
sure.
you know, like you hit me with like some ground rules. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I've tried to hold firm to those. And I think that was important. You know, this is a stressful time, you know, and stress can make some of our habits that our partners do not like become even worse. For instance, a habit of mine is that I always get up very, very early.
So incredibly early. It boggles the mind.
It really all goes back to when I was a child. I enjoyed Saturday morning cartoons. And when I realized like they start coming on like at like 5 a.m., mm-hmm. like I would just get up on Saturday while everyone was dead asleep and just start watching cartoons. And it really pissed off my roommates in college.
I can only imagine.
You know, like they did not like it. But, you know, with this virus now, rather than waking up at like 4:30 or 5 a.m. every day, I'm starting to get up like at 3:30 a.m. And, you know, we have to remember how some of our habits make our partners feel. So, mm-hmm. for instance, when I'm waking up at 3:30 a.m.
I do not wake up at 3:30 a.m.
You don't.
No.
And if I wake you up at 3:30 a.m., you ain't happy.
I don't like that.
You don't. So one of the things I try to do is be quiet as possible and leave the house. I'll actually just leave the house by going out for a short walk in my neighborhood. So I'm not like bumping around in the home and making like even the slightest noises. Because you're a very light sleeper too.
Fairly light sleeper.
So if I'm like, you know, like trying to like pick up a video game controller and play a game and there's any amount of sound, that's not mm-hmm. great. So... Mm-hmm. You know, I try just to take my habit to places that it won't get on your nerves, mm-hmm. you know. It's very much in a way like we're stuck on like a spaceship together.
Yeah.
You know, and you, mm-hmm. you're on your spaceship and you've got to really think of all the other crew members. And I think another thing I would recommend to people is to always assume positive intent. You know, and this goes really for all the people in your house during this period of confinement. And, you know, if they do something that annoys you or upsets you, don't assume that they're doing it to drive you nuts or because they're inherently evil people, you know. And this literally applies to anyone that lives in your house, not just your partner. For instance, you know, my kid, she's been confined. She's not been able to socially interact with her friends.
Right.
Sometimes she's had a few moments where she's been a little despondent, a little sad, mm-hmm. a little overreactive to, you know, just, hey, don't do that. And then she's like, what? Don't do what? Ah!
Yeah.
You
know, yeah. And
you're just, you could say, hey, wow, you're being a bad kid right now. Or you can like, man, like, this must be really rough. And I get it.
So yeah. hard for her because she can't understand why.
Right. It's really just beyond her three-year-old brain's capacity. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't understand what a virus is.
Yeah.
She's had quite a few of them over the years, but she doesn't really know what they are.
Right.
So that's one, is always assume positive intent. Another thing that I've tried to do, too, is just to try to, in terms of being a couple again, is to find ways to date that person in your home, even though you're not leaving your home. You know, don't lose the romance. You know, we've been stuck at home, but we've still continued in a really, you know, strange sort of slight way to go on dates. You know, we go on these walks when you mm-hmm. want to.
Yeah.
We take turns cooking for each other. And, you know, we've made time to really put down our devices and our video games and our computers and just spend time with each other. You know, whether we're sitting on a porch, you know, just sitting outside. And, you know, I think that's really helped make this a lot easier than it could have been, you know, because, you know, we're still very much like as obligated to socialize with each other as a couple as we were before. You know, and I think you can forget that if a lot of the ways you socialize was, hey, let's go out to eat dinner, or hey, right. let's go to the movies. Mm-hmm. You know, now all the restaurants are in your kitchen. All the movies are in your living room.
Right.
And, you know, you still got to think about that, like, that ability to sort of share those experiences and to socialize. Did you have anything else?
Yeah, no, I think all that stuff is true. I think what I am finding for myself is that as this goes on, my ability to like sit down and watch a movie, I feel like my ability to do that is decreasing over time. Like, we watched a bunch of movies the first week, and I find it harder and harder to sit and do that now. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, you know, accumulated like stress and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think just doing something like taking a walk, or we had a fire in our fire pit last night, and that was just sat there and watched the fire, and like that kind of thing is really nice, because I think my ability to like watch a bunch of critically acclaimed movies is decreasing over time. So being flexible about the sorts of activities that you're doing with your partner, and recognizing that, you know, it may just need to be, we're going to take a walk and like comment on the azaleas in bloom and comment on the dog that's, you know, walking past, and that may be it, and that may be enough.
Yeah, yeah. Lower the stakes a little bit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it is a stressful time, for sure. And, you know, I guess that will lead us into our next segment, which is what we are streaming. And, yeah, this week, truth be told, I was a little bit depressed. And even though we didn't watch a lot, we still managed to watch one movie together from beginning to end. And that's Pixar's newest film, Onward, not Upward.
Not Upward, Onward.
Onward, which during a stressful and sad time for a lot of people, was a movie I found to be both stressful and in some ways also profoundly sad. What did you think of this movie? Just briefly describe what it was about, too, just in case anyone's curious.
Yeah, so this is a... This is an animated movie about two teenage brothers who go on a quest to try to bring their deceased father back for one day. It takes place in the context of a mythological world where magic has gone out of the world, and part of what they're trying to do is use magic to bring their deceased father back for one day.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you think of the movie?
I don't think this movie was really intended to be anything other than sort of like fun and enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
But I found myself really stressed out by it for some reason. So I don't know if that's like what I'm bringing to the movie. But I think it was mostly charming. I think in different circumstances, I might have enjoyed it more.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there were parts of the film that were very well made. You know, I appreciated that it's this depiction of an incredibly modern contemporary fantasy world where centaurs and elves and wizards you would normally find in adventures like The Lord of the Rings live in a world very much like ours, where magic has taken second, third, or fourth seat behind technology. And, you know, in this world, instead of looking at games like Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering as sort of fantastical, whimsical games of make-believe, they're actually games about their history, the history of their world. And mm-hmm. I like that twist, that bit of world building that they gave us there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like Pixar, they used to have like the secret sauce. There was a period there where they made these films that just really pinged on a lot of different levels.
It felt like it could have been a DreamWorks movie.
It, you know, in some ways reminded me very much of Shrek.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And, yeah, that was a little strange, and I'm wondering if this is their period now, because, you know, when you watch Disney films, like all the Disney animated movies, there's sort of the beginning, sort of their golden era. And then after Walt Disney died, they lost their way.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was sort of this long period of struggle. A lot of movies that a lot of people have never seen, like The Black Cauldron.
Love The Black Cauldron.
You love it. But
Generation X, don't get me started on The Black Cauldron.
Right. Right. You know, and that's definitely a movie of its time. You know, for me, it was The Great Mouse Detective.
Yeah.
But those movies just didn't have the same impact as like Snow White or Cinderella.
It is true.
And, you know, they really didn't find their way again until The Little Mermaid came out. And then suddenly it was like their platinum era, their renaissance. And, you know, it makes me wonder if Pixar is now sort of wandering a little lost in their own forest. And maybe 10 years, 15 years from now, if people are still making movies and watching them, they'll hit their renaissance. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought it was, I mean, it had some charming bits. I did agree. I like the world building in it. I think there's something fun, and I kind of wanted to know more about the world that they had built with this sort of fantasy idea. And I liked the, it focuses on these two teenage brothers. Their relationship was great. Their mother has a nice role in it. I like the way the relationship of the mother to the brothers is depicted.
Yeah.
It's not like smothering or inappropriate or weird. It's just like the family relationship seemed depicted in a way that was helpful and modern.
Because she goes on her own adventure too.
She does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I did appreciate that. But yeah. So that was our experience of Onward. If you have an experience, you're welcome to call, leave us a voicemail. Let us know if you agreed with us. Let us know if you disagreed with us. We would love to hear what you thought. The other thing I guess we also managed to watch was the end of the newest season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which sort of started before the pandemic. And, in a lot of ways, I've sort of lived out a lot of Larry David type scenarios because of this virus. For instance, like I'll be at work and a coworker of mine has made some sort of smoothie drink in a bullet blender, and they can't open it. And so they're asking me if I can help them open it. I'm like, hey. You know, and then I expect the music to play in the background. You know, but what did you think of the newest season of Curb?
So I didn't start watching Curb Your Enthusiasm until maybe the past year or so. Like, it just totally didn't hit my radar, and I didn't think it would be my sort of thing. But once I started watching it, I really, really loved it. And I have liked a lot of things about this current season. There's a lot of Leon in the current season, and I really like Leon as a character, so I appreciate that.
This was his year.
Yeah, yeah. I think he brings a lot to the table in the series, and so I appreciate that. I think the sort of one of the central conceits of this season is Larry starting this spite store.
Yes.
And, you know, it's sort of a goofy idea, but they do a lot with it. I think it was sort of smart to bring in something that could tie the whole season together in that fashion. I think the some episodes were better than others. You know, there were definitely some shining stars in this season that were really funny and some that were just sort of okay. But I think, you know, the quality on that show, even when they're just sort of okay, it's still very entertaining show.
Entertaining / stress inducing. Yeah.
Oh, I don't find it that stressing. I know you get very stressed by it sometimes.
I stop it. I'll pause.
You have to
it
pause the show. Take a deep breath. And I love it. I enjoy those stress-induced moments from him so much. One of the things I like about the Larry David character on the show is that it is so much more important to him to, like, have things be, like, fair or right in his own mind than it is to, like...
Succeed,
yeah. Like, if he has an opportunity to, like... spend some quality time with a lady, he will totally torpedo it just to get his $500 back or something ridiculous like that when he doesn't need $500.
He's about to finish negotiating a $1 billion streaming deal for Seinfeld. He doesn't need $500.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, he hasn't had sex in a long time. This woman's about to totally grant him entry to the kingdom. And then he just, like, yeah.
Starts arguing over $500.
$500 mm-hmm. that had nothing really to do with her whatsoever.
No.
Yeah. No. It's, you know, there was the spite store that sort of brought this whole thing together. And, you know, essentially Larry is locked into a war with a coffee shop owner named Joe, who banned Larry from his cafe for acting like Larry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he builds the spite store to try to run Joe's coffee shop out of business. You know, and I'm a guy named Joe. I used to own a coffee shop that did go out of business, and those were some triggering moments. Like, you know, you got Joe, he's trying to run this coffee shop, and everyone's going to Larry David's store because it's new, and it's got all these crazy new things, and he's just sort of sitting there with an empty store, sort of sweating bullets. I'm like, oh, I feel your pain, Mocha Joe. I feel your pain. Oh, man, no way. It was oddly... I think something that was catered like almost just for me
in
some strange ways. It really spoke to me in my experience, but going back to JB Smoove, this was his year. And I think the funniest, you know, other than the John Hamm episode, which mm-hmm. was great.
That was great.
The funniest episode was, the funniest part was him talking about how he wants to eat a pumpernickel with burnt toast sandwich. Take a piece of burnt toast and put it between two slices of pumpernickel and eat it. I thought that was just the highlight. And he better get a Golden Globe and or an Emmy, mm-hmm. I think, Best Supporting in a Comedy, because he was fire this year.
He was really great.
He was great. He's the funniest thing on TV this year.
Mm-hmm.
Now for our next segment, which is The Message. And today's message is actually something that we're going to borrow from the CDC, which is, number one, avoid going out in public. And number two, if you do go out in public now, please wear a face mask, and specifically fabric masks that all of us can make at home, because, you know, if you're buying and hoarding up equipment that could be used by our doctors, medical N95 masks, don't do that. They need to be priority. But if you're going out in public, wear a mask. And when this was revealed on Friday, there were a lot of people who had misconceptions about the purpose of these masks. And you had a really good handle on this misconception, Jasmine. Could you explain that?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, what you've said here is right on target, right? If you are trying to get your hands on N95 masks, that's not really appropriate for the average person just going to the grocery store, and those really do need to go to healthcare providers of all kinds. So doctors, like you said, nurses, technicians and technologists, EMT, those folks should absolutely have priority. And even sort of like a medical grade disposable masks, those should really all be going to healthcare workers.
Period.
Social distancing is still really important with or without a mask. But the reason the CDC is asking people to consider or recommending that they wear masks in public, it's not about protecting you from getting COVID-19. It's about protecting other people from you if you have it and you're asymptomatic. So the idea is that you could unknowingly be a carrier, not have symptoms. So the couple ways that could happen is they think that perhaps people could carry the virus and never develop symptoms, or you could be in that period where you have the virus and you have not yet developed symptoms, right? So if you wear a mask, it's going to cut down on the, you know, amount of virus that you're putting out into the air around the people around you. And I think one thing that happens, and this is just human nature, right, is that when people are told to sort of make their own masks, there's going to be a lot of like debate edging into one-upmanship about what is the right way to make this mask. Oh, well, you can't make it with this. You have to make it with that. It has to be shop towels. It has to be vacuum cleaner bags. It has to be this kind of fabric and not that kind of fabric. And there are definitely things that are going to be better than other things, but something is better than nothing. Just like covering your mouth with your hand when you cough is better than not covering your mouth.
Just coughing openly into the air.
Right. Like something is better than nothing. And I think it's important that people not let the perfect be the enemy of the good. So, you know,
it's a great quote.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I didn't come up with that right now, obviously, but you want to, you know, use the materials that are available to you, you know. And there have, one of the challenges that we are facing as a country right now is that communication to the public in times of crisis like this needs to be clear, consistent, and come at us in a variety of different formats so that we can clearly understand it. And that is not at all happening.
Not
right?
at all.
We're not getting that at all. What we're getting is conflicting messages from our leader. And so we are sort of left to make sense of what we should do the best way.
For ourselves.
Yeah. And that's very frustrating and terrifying. And so we can sort of look at the literature that's out there around homemade masks, and there's not a lot of it because there's not really like people were not giving grants to study homemade masks, you know, 5 years ago or whatever. So there is some limited literature out there about what should you make a homemade mask out of and what works. And there's been some folks in the medical community trying to do studies very quickly right now to make sense of it. And when you kind of put all that out there and look at it, it is pretty clear that if you look at the fabric that you're using, for example, and hold it up to a bright light, and you can see through it really easily, it's probably not your best option. If you get something that's really heavyweight, that's going to be better. 100% cotton is better.
Yeah, it breathes.
Because it breathes. You know, if you get something that you can't breathe through, that's going to be a problem, right? So you've got to be able to breathe through whatever material you're using. So like heavyweight quilting cottons are good. Heavyweight 100% cotton t-shirts are a good thing to use if that's what you've got available to you. And the other thing that is definitely true is that if you are using something and you use one layer, that's not as good as two layers. It's not as good as three layers. Yeah. And then if you're able to sort of use some sort of filtration medium in a pocket inside of the mask, then that's also helpful. So there's just a lot of, I think it's an, this can be a place where people want to correct others, you know, like
right.
Here's the right way to do it. Here's the wrong way to do it. And I think the truth is we don't really know, like the data isn't there.
It's not.
And so we just have to kind of use our best judgment and the materials that are available to us. This is not like a good excuse to demand that craft stores be reopened and, you know.
Or to go into stores to buy supplies just for this.
Yeah. So, you know, I think everyone should do what is best and most importantly, maintain their social distancing.
Yeah. I actually have a lot of experience with fabric face masks.
You do?
For the last 3 weeks, I continue to be one of the organizers for a local initiative here called Masks for Our Heroes, a project designed to give, to create fabric face masks as a last resort to give to our healthcare professionals, as well as frontline workers to help during this crisis. And I've helped to supervise and coordinate the creation of literally hundreds of masks. And, you know, I've shared some of that advice on how to make effective masks using material that many people have readily available in their homes, and that's 100% heavy-duty cotton T-shirts. And, you know, when I did this, I actually shared this sort of comprehensive guide yesterday on Facebook, but a lot of people were very glad to have this information. But some people did, as you said, you know, they sort of tried to swoop in and respond and say that these masks won't protect you as much as medical equipment. And that's true. Mm-hmm. But they're also saying these won't protect you as much as other materials will protect you. And I think that everyone's focused on the protect me, that they don't realize that it's protect everybody.
Right.
And having a mask that meets a lot of the guidelines you said is really the best way to go. You know, and if you're really worried about protecting yourself, you know, here's the thought. If everyone's wearing these masks and everyone's preventing themselves from getting everyone else sick, then you are protected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where inversely, if everyone's arguing about what kind of masks help and people don't think wearing masks help, then really no one's being protected. So it is good to just say, just baseline, let's all wear a mask. You know, if you've got some sort of covering over your mouth, not only are you keeping any sort of virus from spreading to others, but another thing you're really doing too is the thing that helps me, because I'm a very nervous person, is I'm not touching my face then.
Right.
I've got this very clear barrier, so my hands will never come in contact with my face during the times when I'm out. Then I go inside, I demask, I wash my hands, I wash my face, and, you know, it's just an added step of protection there. I thought actually I would share some of the pointers that I got about making masks just from my experience. I'll break it down. You know, fabric is important. There are lots of options. But the good news is, yes, you have a fabric readily available in your home. You don't have to go to a store. If you've got like a heavy-duty cotton T-shirt, some sort of promotional shirt from running in a 5K or working a bullshit job, or going to my old business, Geeksboro, for instance, you can take that shirt. You know, a Hanes Beefy Tee is a great example. That's a very common shirt that a lot of companies have used for promotional materials. You take a heavy-duty, 100% heavy cotton shirt, and you can use that as material. You find the blank spaces, and you start cutting that into the pieces. You know, some people recommend that you use the shop these paper towels, shop towels.
The blue ones.
The problem is you can use those once, twice. You can't put it in the washer and reuse it again.
Yeah.
So unless you want to make like a lot of masks, it's good to make something that can be used, washed, and then reused. The other thing I would recommend, and this isn't true for everybody, but it's something that's true for me, which is that ties are better than elastic. You know, a lot of the masks that people are pitching on the internet require elastic, which is certainly a valid way to approach this. I'm not saying it's the wrong way, but, you know, elastic's really hard to come by now because of that. Also, especially, it requires you to go to the store.
Right.
You shouldn't have to go to the store. And if you can make a mask with ties, not only do you not have to go to the store to get that, but I find that it's a lot easier to keep that mask secure over your face. You're not constantly having to readjust it with your hands. The other thing, too, is I have a particularly large, like, Charlie Brown head. And so these elastic straps, they just sort of yank on my ears and chafe them. And it's very uncomfortable. It causes a lot of ear pain. And the other thing I would say is layers. You talked about this, and I just want to reiterate, like, one layer is okay, two layers is good, three layers is great. Like, layers are your friend. And, you know, if you're really good at sewing and you can sew a mask with sort of an additional sort of pocket layer, that way you can insert, like, say, the shop towels that you could cut into pieces or a vacuum bag that you can cut into pieces, then you're getting that added protection into something you can easily rewear. And that's all I'm going to say. And the other thing I'll just concur again is that I'm going to say that until, like, we have definitive, empirically created science stating one way or the other, there isn't necessarily a wrong way to make a mask. As long as you take the mask you're about to wear, hold it up to the light, and don't see anything. You know, the goal really is to keep yourself from infecting others.
Yeah, and I will say, because you've been working on this mask project, some of the masks that people are making have shown up in our front yard as a distribution point for those to then go back out. And the masks that I have seen that people are making from t-shirts, like, you would not know they were made from a t-shirt. They are so tightly woven.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other advantage to t-shirts is that the t-shirt material is meant to be worn over your skin.
Mm-hmm.
So unlike shop towels, like the paper shop towels, which are sort of a sturdy sort of paper product, it's going to fit over your skin a lot more comfortably too. So if you've got to wear it for a long time, if you work on the front line and you've got to wear this all day while you work, it's going to be a lot more comfortable over your face than a lot of the alternatives, for sure. But ultimately, think about what might be best for you. It doesn't have to be the same answer as everyone. You know, there's some people who are making masks out of bandanas and hair bands.
Which is totally fine.
Totally fine. Requires no sewing skills, no sewing machines,
mm-hmm.
which that's the case for a lot of people. Do not go out to buy a sewing machine.
Mm-mm.
You know, just wear something in the meantime and don't try to hoard up or hog up or drive demand for the medical equipment, which needs to go to our healthcare professionals.
Yep.
All right. One thing I am going to do with this episode is, if you look in the episode description, there will be a link where I will give you this breakdown of how to make the masks. I'll also give you a point-by-point how-to guide to making these masks. This is the one that I've been using to help people make hundreds of masks, and I'll have that resource available for you here on the description of the show. So, all right. Now for our last segment, which is just a bit of advice. It's where we give a bit of advice, just a little tiny thing. We've actually been a little heavy on the advice on this episode, but I try to keep the last bit of advice just something small, tiny, consumable. And what could be smaller, tiny, more consumable than a CBD gummy? If you're having a hard time sleeping, I suggest that maybe you acquire a CBD gummy. I'm currently taking a CBD gummy that's 20 milligrams. A couple of things I'm doing to help sort of keep it effective. I don't take one every night. I take one every other night, or sometimes once every 3 nights. That way I don't just wear down its effectiveness. The other thing I would recommend you consider, you know, like, you're taking one and you feel like it's not having a huge effect, do not take two. One will calm you down. Two, then makes it work as an accelerant. And you wake up and your heart's just racing. And you're like, what is wrong with me? I feel like I'm having a full blown panic attack. It's because you're suddenly getting jacked on CBD oil. But CBD gummy, it will not cause you to fail a drug test. It is not a marijuana product. It is derived from hemp. There is no THC in it whatsoever. Try it if you're having a hard time sleeping on some of these stressful, stressful days. Do you got a small bit of advice?
So a bit of advice that I'm going to try to take for myself. This is for people who are working from home right now. So if you are fortunate enough to have, like, an office that you are working from home in, then, you are so fortunate, and that is wonderful, but I don't. I'm at the kitchen table, and the piece of advice that I'm giving myself is that I am going to try to mix up the space that I'm working from home in. So I'm at the end of the table. I'm like backed up against the wall, starting to make me increasingly depressed. I feel like I'm sort of stuck there in all of these Zoom meetings forever, backed up against the wall. So before I start working again on Monday, I'm going to try to flip my workspace around so I just don't feel so caged in every day. So if you are working from home and it's starting to feel uncomfortable, try just mixing up where your workspace is. See if that helps, particularly if you are in a very ad hoc situation. I'm going to give that a shot and we'll see next week if it makes me feel better.
All right. We'll follow up with you on that. Well, thank you guys for listening to our show. If you would like to reach out and contact us, you can do so through a variety of channels. That includes social media. You can also hit us up on our call line. Just simply give us a call at 336-355-7180. Thanks for sharing all this valuable information, Jasmine. And
thank you, Joe.
Yeah. And guys, just remember, you know, wash your hands and find ways to care about others and flex that empathy. It's really the number one thing that will get you through right now, especially with all the stress, is assume positive intent in others, even if they're acting a little, I'll just be blunt, batshit insane.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sweet talk.